You are listening to Powder Radio. Brought to you by Powder Magazine. Welcome to Sponsored, brought to you by Powder Magazine. I'm your host, Mike Powell, and this week on the program, we have a true pioneer of women's free skiing on the show. Her name is Christy Leskinen. She comes from Uniontown, Pennsylvania, but has places all over the country, and she had quite the career in skiing where she fought an uphill battle with Sarah Burke to create equality in skiing for women. And we are going to talk to Christy about the trials and tribulations that she experienced throughout her career and some amazing photo shoots she was part of. So sit back and let's get Christy Leskinen on the show. How's it going?
Good, thanks. And you?
Oh, pretty good.
I thought I was doing a video thing. I was all prepared.
No, it's all audio.
In Arizona, I can sit next to a giant big cactus and talk about skiing.
You're in Arizona right now?
Yeah.
And what are you doing there?
I live here.
How long have you been in Arizona?
At least 5 years now. I have a place in Breckenridge, and I had kept a place in Mammoth until just a couple years ago. I went to Pennsylvania last summer, too. So, I mean, it's hard to say what's home for me, but I get mail here, so it's one home.
My stalking you on the internet should have gone a little further, and I could have found out that you were in Arizona, but it didn't.
Well, I don't know. That would have been difficult. I don't post very much about locations these days. I think my last Instagram was from X Games.
I just talked to Skogan the other day, and he said he ran into you there.
Yeah.
And he put some questions together for you that we'll talk about on Inappropriate Questions. But home started for you in Pennsylvania.
Yes, I grew up in Pennsylvania.
And growing up in Pennsylvania, your family owned a marina, and you were super into wakeboarding and skiing, and which did you start first? Were you more of a water kid at first or right to the snow?
With our family marina, it's called Yawk Lake Marina, and I was definitely on the water from a really young age. As far as doing tricks, wakeboarding grew popular when I was 14 or 15. So at that point, I was already doing tricks on my skis. People often ask me, well, if you competed in wakeboarding and you could do all these flips on a wakeboard, why didn't you snowboard? It was because I skied first, quite simply.
Did you start on water skis, and was that the passion before wakeboarding took place?
I wouldn't say a passion. I was just kind of a water baby. So if there's something that you can do behind a boat, I've done it. I can do it. I enjoy it. It's kind of my happy place.
Have you done the tube that flies you up in the air?
I have been on one, but we very quickly realized that there was nothing safe about them. When we first saw it at the ski show in Orlando a few years ago, I was like, oh, we got to try that. And then it was like, enough.
Yeah, it looks like the most dangerous thing going.
You know, an hour on the lake, and you were like, yeah, this thing's not that rad.
Yeah. So you're in Pennsylvania, and you're on the water a lot. And is your family a big ski family as well? And is that how you get into it?
When I was about 12 years old, my parents got a condo at the local ski area called Seven Springs.
I've been there plenty of times. They have a great rope tow and an amazing roller rink.
Right. I look at the park there now, and I'm like, I wish I was a little bit younger.
So wait, you got in at 12?
I started doing, say, like 360s and stuff when I was 12 years old.
Okay.
I was skiing moguls. Because that was the only thing to do. And growing up at Seven Springs was great because not only do you learn to love skiing through any condition and on a small mountain, but pretty quickly your skills exceed what the mountain has to offer.
Yep.
So you start building jumps. And so at 12 years old, I was building jumps and trying 360s. And I didn't realize that girls in other parts of the country, say Colorado and California, where you had powder to ski and big mountains and cliffs and steeps and trees, and they weren't doing that. So I have to credit my growing up at a small resort like that to giving me the interest in doing tricks.
So it pushed you to make skiing more challenging for yourself and more fun for yourself?
Yep.
Awesome. So you're getting into tricks at 12. Does skiing take over at that point, or is it still just something that you're doing on the weekends? Because I'm sure you're almost in high school if you're around 12, and I wonder what else you're doing. And I know skiing and wakeboarding are pretty important.
So I would say sometime in early high school, I think freshman year, I was 14 and school was canceled. We went home early and it was going to be canceled the next day. There was a big snowstorm. And of course, there's a snowstorm when we're going to Seven Springs. My family's going to the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
I remember my basketball coach calling me and saying, you know, everything was canceled. Wrestling was canceled. Women's basketball wasn't. And I remember calling me and saying, you missed practice. Why'd you miss practice? And I had assumed since school was canceled, practice was canceled.
Right.
And I remember him telling me, well, there's going to be a time where you're going to have to choose. And I said, well, I'll see you around.
And you made the choice right there.
Right there. I never went to another practice.
Wow. And so was that the end of team sports for you?
No. I played soccer all through high school and I ran track and field. I did high jumping and pole vaulting. And then I was doing wakeboarding on the side. So
knowing that you're a great wakeboarder skier, were you good at everything else that you did too? Were you one of those kids who, when you got to the soccer field, you were one of the best on the team, and same with track and field?
I mean, sports complement each other. So if you're skiing moguls all winter, then yeah, your direction change when you're playing soccer is maybe a little bit quicker than the next person's. So I definitely, at a young age, because I was playing soccer in the fall, I was skiing all winter, I was running track and field in the spring, and then I was wakeboarding all summer, water skiing all summer. I stayed really fit year round. So yeah, eye-hand coordination and things, they're transferable to other sports. So I always said that if I wasn't a pro skier, I would have been a pro wakeboarder. And if I wasn't a pro wakeboarder, I would have wanted to play soccer in college. I actually got a track and field scholarship offer that I think I just threw it in the garbage. I didn't even consider it. It held little interest.
Where was that to?
It was just a small local college in Pennsylvania. At that point, I knew I wanted to be a skier, so I had little interest in going to school right away. I had no interest in going to school anywhere right around Pennsylvania, and track and field was just something I did because I liked it, I guess. I don't know. It wasn't something that held a lot of long-term interest by any means.
So you're in high school and you're participating in track and field and soccer, and you're skiing and wakeboarding as well. When do you realize that you want to take skiing or wakeboarding to another level? Because I think at this point you're on a level on both sports where there could be a future in either. And I would think you would have to make a choice at one point of which you wanted to go further with. When did you realize that?
The way everything snowballed for me is I went when I was 14 to the Bear Mountain Mogul Challenge in Killington, Vermont, because I like to ski mogul. So my dad took me up there for a vacation. I entered the event. I think I got second. And at the award ceremony, the coach came up to me. They told me about KMS. They told me about travel and ski moguls. And I was like, this is amazing. So they spoke to my dad. And the very next year, I went to KMS for the winter to compete in moguls. And when I got there, I pretty quickly realized that I like skiing moguls, but I was doing 360s off the jumps and stuff. And I was like, well, where I really excel is doing the jumps. And that's at the point where I realized that other girls weren't doing those kind of tricks.
Right.
Like any kid, if you realize that you're better than most people at something, you get confidence from it and you only want to do it more. So I went to KMS that year. The very next year, my senior year, I went to Steamboat in Colorado. So I was really fortunate. Missed soccer my senior year in high school, but long story short, so at that time I was still competing in wakeboarding. So I was in Steamboat my senior year skiing moguls. That summer, I went to nationals and world championships for wakeboarding, and I did quite well. Picked up some wakeboarding sponsors. I got second at nationals as an amateur, fourth at world championships. So it was like, okay, well, if I want to keep competing in wakeboarding, it's time to turn pro. So I decided I'm taking a year off school. My parents said, you have 1 year to see if you can make this work. So I take the very next year off school. I'm still skiing moguls. I go out to Steamboat. I'm going to ski moguls all winter again. And that's when I found out I was watching Johnny DeCesare's movies the whole time. I was watching Poor Boys Productions movies, and I was completely obsessed with them. Johnny doesn't remember it at all, but I remember meeting Johnny that year. There was a Johnny Mosley Invitational at Steamboat, and Johnny DeCesare was there, and I got to meet him standing outside getting frostbite. And I remember asking him, when are you going to put a girl in your movies? At that point, he said, oh, we're going to put a girl next year. And so the very next year, movie came out, there's no girl in it. I was like, what the hell? This is not cool. And then the US Open started gaining traction. So I was in Steamboat and I found out about the US Open in Vail, and I was like, I'm going to the US Open. So I went to the US Open. I got to meet JF Cusson and JP Auclair and Johnny Mosley, and one of the coolest experiences that ever happened to me. Skiers didn't slide rails at that point. It was like a brand new thing for a skier to slide a rail. So there was this 5-foot rail. It wasn't even in the course. And everyone was trying to learn how to slide this thing. And I remember hiking it with Johnny Mosley. It was a surreal moment for me as a kid that's been watching these movies for a long time. And I could slide the rail, and my mom was there cheering for me. But Johnny did something that was really amazing. He took the time to speak to me, tell me that he thought I had a future in the sport. And the very next morning, he brought me a pair of twin tip skis, a pair of his old twin tip skis. I was sliding a rail on mogul skis. You know, twin tips had just come out. And he brought me a pair of his twin tips and gave them to me the next day. And it was like, all right, it's on. And so there was kind of no looking back. I was definitely going to pursue the free ride thing. I met Johnny DeCesare again. He invited me on some shoots. And that was history for me.
I would think being a mogul skier and meeting Johnny Mosley like that, and then him giving you skis, and he's Johnny Mosley at that point, he changed skiing. That's got to be super inspiring to the point where you're like, holy shit, this is my hero. And if this guy is saying I've got a future, I do. And then you're probably the only girl at the US Open at that point. So I'm sure all the guys are looking on with respect, especially when you're sliding a rail.
I was definitely the only girl that hit the big air jump that year. There wasn't even really a girls' competition. They let me ski. It was definitely one of those defining moments in my life that changed everything and set me on a path.
So Johnny Mosley could be looked at as one of those things that really helped push you into becoming who you are today.
Absolutely. And like I said, at that event, it was my heroes at that point were Johnny Mosley and JF Cusson and JP O'Claire and Johnny DeCesare. Those were the four people that I really admired.
Four amazing people to admire even today. If some of the kids listening don't know who they are, I highly recommend doing some research and finding out who those guys are as they set the path for what skiing is today. And speaking of setting the path of what skiing is today, for you, being the only girl in the big air at that US Open, it had to be frustrating as there wasn't a lot of women around to really share in what you were building. There was Sarah Burke, she's in Canada. You guys connected. And I know that building the scene for women and getting respect and fair treatment has been something that's been in your head and something you've been doing throughout your whole career. And in the beginning, what kind of challenges were you guys up against?
You know, what was incredible is in the very beginning, that first year, I was the only girl at the US Open, and I started doing some shoots with Johnny. And then pretty quickly, you heard there's also this girl in Canada, and Sarah was running around competing against the guys there. We finally met that summer, and it was funny because we had heard about each other long before we met each other. It was like, there's two girls that do this. Kind of like almost instant rivalry, but not at all a rivalry, because we knew very quickly that we needed each other, that we needed to support each other, that we needed to push each other. In the early years, it was incredibly frustrating. The next year, Sarah and I were the only girls at the US Open. And I can remember one year where they said, oh, you know, girls are going at 9 a.m. So practice starts at 7. It was freezing. Girls are going then. And then it's like, oh, no, we have too many guys. We need to get through them. So girls are going to go at noon. And then, oh, no, we were still going. Their organization was all over the place. And I think finally we competed that day at 4 in the afternoon. And it just felt like a struggle for many years. It was, we're here. We want to compete. We need to be treated with some respect and some enthusiasm. And it took a long time. It took a lot of lobbying. I wrote a ton of letters. Sarah and I, we schemed together on all of them. We'd send emails back and forth like, what do you think about this? And she'd make a couple changes and I'd make a couple changes. We'd get our letter together and send it out to other girls and get them to sign it too. And yeah, it was frustrating, but it was fun and it was challenging and it was exciting. We were building something.
And did you look at it throughout your whole career as an uphill battle that you were fighting?
Yeah, I think I did. And I actually think at some point I took that a little bit too far. I let it consume me in some ways. I let the frustrations of it shape my attitude. So it was hard for me to all of a sudden, after fighting all this, to achieve something and then to let that fight go. And I felt like you still had something to prove. Or sometimes when you're kicked in the teeth enough, you just want to go, forget it, get away from me. I don't want anything you have to offer. It was a long time coming. Even when we got in X Games, it would be like, yeah, girls are in X Games. Well, the girls' prize money was $2,000 and the guys was 30.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And we were hitting the same jumps and risking life and limb at that point.
And it's still not there, maybe prize money is. But if it wasn't for you in the beginning, we might still be in the $2,000 prize money for women and 30,000 for guys, and it would be bullshit still. So you put your neck out for all women to try to make things better, and it's definitely started working. But during that process, were there any mistakes that you made that you look back and are like, what was I thinking? And that really didn't help me.
Sarah had this kind of innate ability to fight the good fight. But then when it was time to get in the gate, to smile and act like it didn't happen and just kind of go for it. And I didn't separate the two as well. I wish I could have.
I was going to give you an easy out there, but maybe it's not an easy out. But a question I wanted to ask was, you've done, and I won't say questionable because they're not questionable. I think they're awesome in general. But you've done some photo shoots in the past where if I Google your name, you come up in my screen and you're wearing not so much. And to be asked to do that for a magazine is a huge achievement in some respects. At the same time, when you're lobbying for equality for women in sports, some people can look at those shoots and question you for it. But did you experience that? Because I saw stuff on the internet and it wasn't all rosy.
When I was 19, I did the Nordica posters. When I first came on the scene, this is my first sponsor. They're paying me. I'm thrilled. I go to one of my first photo shoots and they're like, okay, here's what you're going to do. And I'm like, okay, I'm standing with a pool cue and I have an outfit on and I don't think much of it. This is like my dreams coming true.
Yeah, totally.
What they're asking me to do. And I'm too young and excited to say no to anything at that point. And the way my shirt is, it blends in with the background. It makes me look like I have the biggest boobs of all time. What was disappointing to me there is Nordica flew me around to all these ski shows all over the country in the fall. And I would go to sign this poster and people would think I was just a model. That was kind of the first time that I recognized like, this isn't okay. I don't like this. I don't want to be like like the model at the show signing things for little kids. That's not what I am. I'm a skier. I want to be recognized for my talent.
Yeah.
So the very next year, I did another shoot with Nordica. And this time, they were not even going to put a ski photo on my poster. And I lost it. I was like, no, that's not okay. There has to be a ski photo, this, that, and the other thing. So they just put a ski photo in the bottom.
And that was just to shut you up?
And that was just to shut me up. But the next year, I didn't re-sign with Nordica.
There you go.
So there's a growing experience. And after that, I had decided for all endemic ski media, I was going to be a skier. That was embarrassing. But, you know, then FHM came along and they asked me to be in the magazine. And I decided I could separate those two. If I could be a skier first, and because I was a skier, I could get recognized as being a beautiful woman, then I felt like that was okay. Actresses do that kind of stuff all the time. They get asked to do it because they're actresses. They don't get asked to do it because they're... I guess what I'm saying is, from then on, I wanted my skiing to come first.
Okay.
And I don't have any regrets. In my FHM shoot, I'm not wearing anything less than a bathing suit.
Yeah, totally.
I'm not in any crazy positions. So I can look back on that when I'm old and gray and go, look at me when. I could separate the two. So when Free Skier kept doing their women's shoot, I think you can look at a few years in after I kind of learned my lesson in those first two posters. And I'm wearing jeans and a long sleeve shirt. And there's other girls in bikinis in the Free Skier magazine. And I was like, no, there's a difference.
Well, it's awesome that you were able to figure that out, separate it, and be who you wanted in the ski world, and then also open up other opportunities, because that is a huge opportunity that no other skier really gets. And I'm glad you ran with that, because it's great exposure for you. It's going to help you line up things down the road if you like to. And when you're 80 years old and you can look back and be like, yep, that was me and I was badass. The only time that there's a question is if you think about the time in skiing when it was done, there wasn't equality in skiing and you were fighting for that change. There's nothing questionable in my mind. I think it's cool that you're able to do it. And another question I want to ask you about is money in your ski career. Were you able to make a good living as a professional skier, or did you have to make money outside of the industry?
I feel like I had a great career. Sometimes I wish I was a snowboarder. It would have been a much more lucrative. But there was certainly a point in a few years there when I was really at the top of my game where I was making a great living and I was traveling the world and I had opportunities other people could only dream of. And I actually think the landscape is a bit more difficult for women now, because in the early years when it was Sarah and I, and then there were a few years where it was like Sarah, Michelle Parker, and Greta and I, the list of girls that held significant sponsorship was really small. Well, that's expanded greatly. I don't think that the ski company's budgets have expanded greatly. So I think it's a little tougher now.
As far as injuries in your career, how's your body these days? And what kind of toll did that take during the competitive part of your career?
I have thumbs that do things they're really not supposed to. But other than that, I was really fortunate that my knees are all in one piece. There aren't very many women that have gone through a ski career that can say that. In fact, I might be the only one that I know of. I had some pretty significant head injuries. I actually had a hemorrhage in 2005. And that was another turning point in my career because that changed me. There's a difference between blowing a knee and needing knee surgery or shoulder surgery or broken collarbones and being told, take this anti-seizure medication, there's a chance you might have seizures for the rest of your life. There's a big difference. And so that was like a big wake-up call for me. When you're young and you're in the sport and you've not been injured, you don't think about consequences, but it can't help but creep into your mind after you've been around the block a few times. So that was a big one. And then concussions is what led me to end my ski careers, because about 3 years ago when I was finishing, I got a couple more concussions, small ones. I mean, just like I hit my head and my head hurts for a couple hours. But they kind of stacked up and I ended up needing to do vision therapy and vestibular therapy. And I went down this long road of finding, I was dizzy all the time. It was a long road of trying to find out what's going to help me and not accepting that this could be the rest of my life. So
that's scary. That's something that the outside world doesn't really see. And I would think maybe even some of your fellow skiers don't see it. Hitting your head that's not even that hard and 3 hours later you're still feeling pain. That's when you realize.
It was weeks later. I had my head injuries during skiing, but I was kind of recovered from those. And I was kind of done skiing and I was like, sweet, I can wakeboard again. I can get her wakeboarding. So I went full force wakeboarding for a bit. I hit my head a couple times and it was like, no, I can't go back to skiing. I can't go back to anything right now. It was about a year and a half of seeking help and finding answers and dizzy all the time. My depth perception was off. I had a hard time driving a car. I didn't want to watch TV. I mean, I was a mess there for a while.
Well, that sucks. because you hear about that, but you haven't really spoken to anybody that's gone through it.
Yeah.
I believe you pride yourself on being an all-around athlete, and you were picked to be on the ABC Superstars, and you beat T.O. What was the best part about the Superstars? Because you're put into a class of athlete that is totally different than what you've experienced before. You're used to working with guys who at the most make $200,000 a year and are traveling the world skiing and kind of living like dirtbags at times. And then you go somewhere where it's the Superstars and you're with the $20 million a year athlete who has been in a gym and people focusing on their genetics their whole lives. And was that a totally different experience for you?
You've never lived until you run a 50-yard race against Terrell Owens on the beach. It was really amazing. It was Terrell Owens, Brandi Chastain, Lisa Leslie, Jennifer Capriati, you know, some really interesting athletes from all across the athletic world. It was kind of a dream come true. I watched the Superstars as a kid, and I was always kind of amazed that skiers always did really well. Johnny Mosley won it. Jeremy Bloom won it. Herman Meyer did it. I was always kind of amazed how well skiers did in that event. I think I looked it up before I went on the show myself. If you looked at the winner and the runner-up in the last 6 years, they did it. So there's 12 positions. Six of those positions went to skiers. I kind of went in it like, I can't wait. And the interesting thing was every time they added another sport, I felt more and more confident because I did have that background. And I think if you grow up skiing, you probably come from a somewhat fortunate upbringing. So you have the opportunity to try all these different things. So when they said jet skiing's next, I was like, geez, a whiz. You know, Lisa Leslie grew up in downtown LA and she's 6 foot two or 6 foot.
Her parents didn't own a marina.
So yeah, when swimming came up and kayaking and all these different sports, it was a really fabulous opportunity. I loved every minute of it.
And my last question for this is, you called out some athletes at the X Games a couple years ago. They had introduced a new sport and it was esports. While I don't think esports belongs in the X Games, their sports are bigger than action sports.
Absolutely.
In 5 years, they are going to make our sports look very small.
Absolutely.
But you called them out for being in the X Games, which I totally agree with. When you're in the X Games, that event is built on athleticism, being out in the field doing something. Not that you're not doing anything playing video games, but they should have their own contests. But you called out some X Gamers and it blew up, I think, way bigger than you possibly could have imagined. What happened there and how did you resolve it?
I don't know that I resolved it. Kind of decided I owned what I said. I believe in what I said. You can remove context from any situation and take it to an extreme and believe it means whatever you want it to believe. But at the end of the day, what I was standing up for was the fact that I watched X Games from a little kid and I trained very hard at it. I risked my life, and maybe that's a little dramatic, but I certainly risked serious injury and I lost my best friend training for the X Games. So yeah, I felt like what Tony Hawk and Matt Hoffman and their legacies, we kind of either built something as an X Games community or we didn't. I have absolutely no problem with gamers. I understand how much dedication it takes and how much they have to practice and that it takes eye-hand coordination and quick reflexes. I can give them all sorts of credit, but I basically was saying they just don't deserve the same medal that Sarah Burke won, that Tony Hawk won, that Matt Hoffman won. Yeah, they make enormous amounts of money. There's way more video games sold in the United States than there are pairs of skis. I don't necessarily know that's a great thing for... But that's another discussion. I don't take credit away from the gamers. I was merely making the point. There's a Madden NFL game, I think, at the Super Bowl every year. People come and they can win $50,000 or something crazy, but they don't get a Super Bowl ring.
That totally makes sense.
That was kind of my point, is that we've either created something that stands for something. Kind of rather see the X Games end than be diluted. I'd rather people that have the X Games medal in 20 years be able to say, I got an X Games medal and it stands for something. They go, oh, you must have been a pretty tough person when you were younger. You must have done some crazy stuff. I have no problem with gamers. I have total respect for them. I just don't think that gamers should receive the same medal as X Games.
I think they should have another thing like the X Games, but it would be 5 times bigger.
Call it an X Gamers medal.
Bingo.
And everyone's being clear, and that's great.
I wish you would have said that then. Then everybody would have been like, holy shit, that was really smart. The one thing with that whole thing is ESPN is using all the action sports that they've built up to go to a bigger market and say, hey, watch us. We're going to put you in the show because they have the audience for the X Games. And they're like, we're going to sell all this advertising to the esports and we're going to have this huge audience and we're going to be able to make them all watch it. So it's kind of a ploy to really get more viewers and more people and more money at the end of the day. So it probably worked for ESPN's objectives, but at the end of the day, it doesn't really work out to the athletes' objectives.
There was something very conspicuously missing from the X Games this year.
And that would be?
Gaming. They probably decided that they have bigger and better things where they can make much more money. In my mind, I was standing up for Sarah, for the sacrifice that was made.
Well, you should be proud of yourself for doing that, because anybody who saw that was right in your corner the second they read it. We understood that it wasn't a diss on gamers, but it was more of the respect of what the athletes put into getting an X Games medal. And on that note, I'm going to thank you for being on the sponsored podcast. I know you're going to Baldface tomorrow, is that right?
I am.
So you're pretty psyched. What's the forecast look like there?
It looks like they've been getting a couple inches of snow, but it stayed cold. So I'm hoping it's going to be pretty epic conditions.
Nice. Well, you enjoy your trip there, and I will talk to you on Inappropriate Questions, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
So that was time with Kristi Leskinen, and she has an amazing story. She really made a difference for women in skiing. And we will have more with Kristi on Inappropriate Questions. You can find that at thepowellmovement.com. And on Monday on thepowellmovement.com, we will have Leanne Pelosi on the show. Leanne's been a professional snowboarder for 15 years or so. And this year she put out a film, Full Moon. It's a women's snowboarding movie that is super fun, and it really shows the best of what snowboarding has to offer. And I'm psyched to have Leanne on the show. So tune in on Monday on thepowellmovement.com to hear Leanne Pelosi. I want to thank everybody for listening. If you have any feedback for me, you can reach me at Powell1 on Twitter or Mike at thepowellmovement.com. Thanks again, and talk to you next week.